This episode was recorded in November 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Hi, Tim. How are you? First of all, how are you?
I'm doing great. We're surviving, and a cat in the neighborhood has adopted me, so I actually have some companionship here.
Nice. So that's good. I don't think we've ever been as fascinated with America as we are just at the moment. How is the good old USA?
It's a royal mess, between lack of leadership and this horrible pandemic. But hope is on the way. And I think that within the next 65 or 70 days, we'll get going in the right direction again.
It's been turbulent, I think we can safely say, hasn't it?
That's a very nice way of putting it.
Thank you. Yes. I thought I'd better open up and be polite. Yeah.
That's good.
There was a lovely, the last one on it, there was a lovely, I think you call them memes, don't you? That my kids always show me. And there's a picture of some guy with a hat and Donald Trump's hair, that's all you can see, building a wall to barricade himself in the White House, which is, I don't know if that's got to America. It's certainly got around, which perfect. I thought was very good, I have to say.
That's perfect. I like it.
How do you keep yourself fit? That's the first thing I want to ask you.
Well, I spin. I have a spin bike, so right. I'll do three times a week. I'll do like an hour on that and burn 500 calories or so. And I just watch what I eat, and then I also have weights that I work with and stuff like that. I just have a routine and a regimen that. Just so that I just stay flexible and loose. Because I always get up really early on a work day, any day, but on a work day especially, just to get the cobwebs out of my head and get going and the blood going. So by the time I get to work, I'm well awake, because otherwise you're going to be photographed like kind of stumbling through a scene and, it's not the best look.
Have you always been like that? Have you always sort of watched what you ate and sort of, I guess, I mean, you have to take care of yourself. It's as simple as that, don't you, in your profession?
Vanity is an evil overlord, because what happens is, especially that during a certain period of my career, like in my 20s and 30s, I'd take my shirt off and I'd have to, you're going to do love scenes and whatever and, running at the beach or whatever.
I hate you.
And I remember seeing a picture of I won't mention the actor, but I remember seeing a picture of this actor and he looked terrible. And he was playing this love scene and he was supposed to be like, he supposedly, his character looked great. And I just said, no, never, never, never. Because, it's not good for you.
To be fair, you are one of those. I don't say we'd love to hate you, but you at what point did you realize you were, one, so good looking, and two, is it in the genes that you've always sort of been, you've been very sleek and all that kind of thing?
Oh, that's very nice. Well, but you know what? It's interesting because I didn't grow. I was short. They called me the wimp. I was this little tiny, I was like 5'5", 5'6", when I was all the way going through high school, and I didn't grow. I didn't get my height. I think it was 5'7" or something when I graduated. And in the next year, I was like 6'2", in the next year and a half. And that's when I started getting girls' attention. There was a girl in high school named Janelle Penny, of all things, who told me that, you're cute. I'd go out with you if you were 6 feet tall. And it was like, oh, great. But I was also, so I didn't really have a lot of experience with girls or no success or wasn't glib. I mean, really, Animal House was a lot of acting because I really didn't have a tremendous amount of experience.
Sure.
And success like that character did, like Eric Stratton did with women. And so I got to play out my life's dream.
That's fantastic. You're the busiest man as well. I mean, I was... I say to everybody we do these interviews, I feel like a complete stalker because I look at everything you I've got about 120. You're in the nicest possible way. You're the worst one because your CV stretches so long. So I was looking at. Hang on, I made a couple of notes. I think since 2017, there's been Madam Secretary, The Affair, The Good Fight, Virgin River, This Is Us, Fast and Furious Spy Racers, Ryan Hansen Solves Crimes on TV, Child's Play. I mean, how do you do it? And why is it? Have you always been that driven?
Yes. You know, and it's also the I think the misconception is that you work all the time. I mean, an actor really, people say, are you ever going to retire? And I think, I've been retired for 40 years. I mean, it's like, you, if you're a busy actor, you're not a series, you might work 2, 3, 4 months a year, you know, with big gaps of time in between. So that's sort of like being retired, you know, and I, except when I was directing a lot, you know, I sort of segued at a certain point into primarily being a director and for about, you know, 6, 8 years. And I was still keeping the acting going, but what happens is directing usurps most of your time because of the amount of time is triple the amount of time that is required for an actor. Excuse me. So that was exhausting. But that was one of those things that I worked really, really, you know, 40 weeks a year, just one thing to the next. And it was tough for me because it kept me away from my family, kept me away from my kids. And, you know, that takes a toll. So I most recently in that past 3 to 5 years, just more focusing on acting, which, you know, so you do an episode of This Is Us. I might work 3 days on that. And then I, you know, have a month off, and then I might do an episode of some, you know, The Affair, which in The Affair, I think basically I worked 2 or 3 days. So, I mean, and they pack things in and condense it. So that really doesn't take all that much time.
When do you know something like Virgin River? When do you sit there and go, do you know what, this is going to be a success? People are going to like this. And at what point do you sort of think, oh, hey, I'm on a winner here?
You know, it's an interesting thing. It's a wonderful question because, you know, on a network show or a cable show, like boom, it's on the air and you get ratings and there's all this instant feedback. It's almost like live theater. You get, oh, they liked it, you know, and the reviews are in. Whereas on Netflix, you don't get that kind of feedback. And what happened with us on Netflix, we shot the first season and we finished, and you know, there's a gap where and with Netflix, it breaks, it premieres worldwide in all languages. So there's post-production is a very lengthy thing, you know.
I've seen a brilliant clip on your Instagram of you in Italian. You're fantastic as well.
It was good, wasn't it? My wife's Italian, so she loved that. I mean, she said, yeah, it's a good actor. So that's what post-production in Netflix takes so long. But what happened was they called up our showrunner and who came in and pitched the second season while the first season was still being in post-production, and they started the writers going. And so we knew pretty quickly we were going to come back for a season two.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to say anything about it because Netflix only, I think, October 24th or 5th announced that season two was premiering. And I think then it's breaking in across the world on November 27th. So, yeah. But we're not allowed. So they have a whole different approach to it. And it's hard to tell really how you're doing, or they don't release, ratings or anything like that. So it's a unique sort of system they have.
Do they think, let's get Tim Matheson, we'll get 2 for 1 here. Cause sort of halfway through Virgin River, they sort of, I don't know what happened to the director. They go, oh, hang on, Tim, is it like that? Tim, will you direct a couple of episodes for us? We need to direct, oh, Tim's here. Can you do, is that how it works? Or are you brought in as actor director to start with?
Well, in this case, I was brought in that way to start. So I knew I was going to direct 2 episodes and act in 10. When I did Heart of Dixie over at Warner Brothers, I came in only as an actor. I was a guest actor.
Yeah.
And then the long story short, there was a lot of conflict between my directing work and the dates they wanted me to act, and lawsuits were threatened and blah, 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 blah. So they said, we're going to make you a regular on Heart of Dixie. And to get rid of all the conflicts. And then they asked me several times to direct. And I was like, gosh, I had never been in a series, and I didn't want to, like, what if they don't like me as a director? And I don't want to muddy the water, you know? And they finally convinced me that, oh, it'll be fine. It'll be great. And it was, I had a great time. I would direct 2 episodes a year at Heart of Dixie and act in all of them. And it was, what happens when you're doing a series, and it was new to me, it's a family. That's your family. And they become your support group, and you're their biggest cheerleaders. And so, you know, it was really quite rewarding to be able to work with them as a director and as an actor. And it was a lot of fun.
It fascinates me because, say, that's a perfect example. And it's twofold for you as well. Is one, when the series is going really well and you come in as a director, which happens, one, you want to make your mark in the Tim Matheson style, but you don't want to be a smarty pants and people go, look, he's trying too hard. And the second one is, you've gone on great with all the crew, with the actors, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you step behind, there must be not a tendency, there might be a situation where you actually get on the nerves. Does that ever happen? Is there a conflict like that?
Well, my job as a director is merely to be there in support of the actor. I mean, and put the camera in the best possible place, you know, for to make sure they look good, but also to capture the essence of the scene and to maybe, you know, dramatize it. And I try to let the actor go and do what they're doing, you know. And then maybe it's like a good coach comes up and says, you know, you look a little open over here. If you just take 2 steps to your right, you can be really open, you know. Or just say, hey, try this or try that. If they don't want to do it, great, you know. But I'm just there as a cheerleader and a supporter, as a director, and to protect the writer, just to make sure that the story the writer wants to communicate and tell is told, you know. So that's really it. And I must say, when you come in on a series as a director, most all of the actors know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and they have characters firmly in hand. And so if you have to do anything, you might kind of just, you know, try one this way, what do you think, you want to maybe try this or try that? And if they go, and actors love to be directed. The bigger the actor that I've worked with, you know, Donald Sutherland, or it comes to mind, but Jill Clayburgh, they love direction, because you come in with your thing, and then a director will say, hey, you know, try that. And it'll give them a total freedom to try something new and do something, and then something will happen. So I must say, very rarely do you find actors who just resist you. It's happened, you know, it does happen, but, you know, they don't trust you. They don't trust themselves, or they want to just do what they're doing. I'm not sure.
Did you like a director telling you or speaking to you? Did you like being directed, or did you come in and say, you know, I think I know what I'm doing here? No.
I really do like it. I mean, direct depends on what they're doing. A confident director wants to see what you're doing. Says, you know, I thought you'd sit here, get it up, and try to, you know, blah, you know, and maybe shoot a take or two, and then start playing with it. But I've had directors try and direct you before you even do the scene. You know, they say, here's what I want you to do, and I said, wait, why don't we just rehearse? Why don't we just do our thing, and then you don't direct the scene before we do the scene. And things like that, you know, and that's frustrating for me, because the process, we have to discover, as an actor, you're really trying to get real emotions. So I want to let them play. Let them go.
Now you're over 30.
Way over 30.
Okay, 35. Old, do the roles differ that you, well, they do, obviously, but Are there any roles out there you think, oh, I'd love her. I mean, killing Reagan, for example, is almost one. Oh, God, that's fun. Wow, I'm glad I can tick that off, which was fantastic, wasn't it? Maybe you're the right age for it, sort of, yeah, obviously in acting terms. I mean, what a role to get your teeth into.
Yeah, that was great. You know, what happens is you look back and I've had different segments of my career, and I discovered somewhere along the line that about every 5 to 7 years, you sort of need a transition into the next phase.
But that's so difficult, isn't it? That's so difficult, especially in my industry. People are different. They look at me differently. I've been away. I've been abroad for a while in the Middle East, and I've come back. I mean, I was always ugly, but now I'm old and ugly. You know, it's not a great combination.
That's very funny. Well, it's true. I mean, I was a kid actor. I was 12 years old when I started, and I really didn't gain a lot of, you know, success. I was a working actor. I do a day here on this show, or I used to kid about it saying I was the third kid through the door. Here comes the regular. Here comes like Beaver. Here comes Beaver's close friend, and then I came in. You know, so it was like, I did that, and then I did a lot of cartoon work while I finally grew into a younger man. Then I had a cowboy period, and I did The Virginian and a bunch of Westerns, and then I did Bonanza, and then I did The Quest with Kurt Russell for a year, you know. And then I sort of went back into acting. I mean, after those series, I went back into freelance acting. I was playing these boring next door kind of characters. Milk toast. I don't know. There were nothing roles. And it was like, so I took improv and I just tried to get loose into comedy and stuff. Then I got Animal House because of that. So I kept trying to segue to the next thing on my own. And then sometimes it just grabs you and you know, finds you. I mean, I was doing a lot of directing and I was not acting that much. And then West Wing came up and I went in an audition and got that, you know? And so, It just took off and it had a life of its own. So you never know what's going to happen.
You don't, which is the beauty of it. I could not do this interview. My daughter Alice, when she realised that we were going to be chatting, she absolutely loves The West Wing, which millions all over the world do. She said, "You've got to ask him about Martin Sheen," and she knows that she can recite all your lines. Now, there is a case in point where, you know, where we're talking about when do you realise you're onto something good. I mean, Aaron Sorkin. I mean, it's up there with the greatest of all time, isn't it?
Well, it was such a unique show, and it should never have worked. Nothing political, because they were sort of done in the vein of those weekly procedural kind of shows, which were very, you know, and there was a certain formula for writing them, and that's the way the writers did them. And then this guy Aaron comes along, and when Rob Lowe told me about it when he was doing the pilot, and I thought, oh God, that sounds so boring and so, you know, good for you, Rob, way to go. And then I went in and auditioned and got the part, and I started reading the material, and it was like, oh my God, every week you read it, and it was better than the week before, and the week before was brilliant, and you kept thinking he's never going to top this, and it just was spectacular. And it was one of those things that I think from the second it was on, it was a hit. I mean, it was overnight. And it was like, that's one of those things. And I was just recurring. I was not a regular. And, you know, I might do 6-8 episodes a year. And I couldn't go down the street without people just, you know, oh my God, we love the show. Oh my gosh. And I was sort of the bad guy, which was kind of fun, you know? So it was a real treat because there was such humanity and heart to all the characters, and it was it appealed to our better angels, you know. I think that whole show and the spirit of that show.
Is it easier either as an actor or as a director if the actors get on, if there's a real spirit about it, you know? In my walk of life, it's the same thing. You know, if you're in a good team that you really like, you tend to perform a lot better. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. That's a great point you're making, I think, because I've noticed that there's you know, in life, there are a lot of different types of people, but there's two kinds of people that you work with in any walk of life. There's team players, and then there's solo players, you know. And as my kids were growing up, I always wanted them to do team sport just to get the sense of what it's like to work with a group and support them and share the good times and the bad times. Because if you do solo, you know, like a long distance runner, you play tennis or games that are solo, you don't learn how to rely on other people, and you get this sort of isolationist kind of attitude. And that was the thing about the West Wing. It was great. I remember coming in one day. Oftentimes I was on another show up in Vancouver, and I'd fly down to LA and I would do two episodes of the West Wing. They'd combine them into like two or three days, just scene after scene after scene. And I remember seeing Allison Janney walking around, and I said, "Hi, Allison, I didn't know you were working today." And she said, "No, I'm not. She came in on her off days, and she would work with a stand-in or a background artist and run her dialogue from those press conferences. And she was rehearsing. I'd never seen an actor on television do this. And Richard Schiff would do the same thing. And so there would be there on the, so there was that family and that harmony, you know, about it. I mean, you know, Rob Lowe, I think, had some issues about the way the show was going, and there was some backstage stuff there, and he left. But that other core group was, and I think Rob's back in the fold now. I think they were all, you know, they just did a reunion. But there was this group of fantastic actors that were mostly character actors. You know, Martin Sheen was certainly a star, but everybody else was like just a really good actor that didn't have all that much success or prominence at the time.
Can I just ask you about Killing Reagan? I mean, how did you do it? I've watched some of the interviews you've done, and I saw that, you know, you watched everything he did, and I guess that comes to mannerisms, the way he carries himself, the accent. Got Cynthia Nixon as well. I mean, how long does that take? And at what point you go, yeah, I'm happy with this?
I don't know that I ever got, I got happier with it, you know, and more comfortable with it. First time I tried it, and first time I was one of those things where I had a scene and I was doing Reagan for the first time, and I was just looking around to see, what does anybody think of this? Was that okay? I mean, it was like, you know, then you sort of let go of that and get into it. But I had made a mistake at one point. I played JFK in a miniseries called Jackie with, what's her name? She was married to Val Kilmer, Joanne Whalley. Uh-huh. And who's a wonderful, wonderful actress. And the mistake I made was I did too much work on the voice and too much work on the accent and too much work on, so I would focus too much on that, or at least in my mind, I thought I did that. So with Reagan, what I did was I just said, I'm going to listen and just submerse myself in the sound and all that stuff. And then I'm just going to let it go. And I'm going to work on this part of it, you know, because the inner man, you can't act politics, and you can't, you know, and you can't act an accent. I don't think, you know, I think you have to let it take care of itself. So I just wanted to bring that together, and it seemed to work pretty well. People said, oh yeah, you didn't mimic him, but it was that. So I accomplished what I set out to do.
Okay, let me just run through, if you don't mind me running through a couple. What's Clint like?
Oh, he's the best. He's a gem. He's the best active listener as an actor I've ever worked with. He taught me that. I asked him once, I said, "Do you want to rehearse thing?" He goes, "I don't like to do too much rehearsal, because the first time you say those words is something special. Maybe we should say that for the camera." You know, it's almost like improv, you know? And it was like, wow, you know? And he was also very gracious and wonderful to his fans. And he, you know, and yet he could walk down the street. I mean, tall, you see, it's Clint Eastwood. He could actually disappear. I mean, he just put his head down and just walk through people and nobody would notice him. But boy, if he'd have to look up, you know, he'd be swarmed. And he was no fuss, no muss. We always finished early. You know, and even though there was another director on that picture, he directed it. You know, I mean, he was sort of controlling things in that way. He had his people around him, his crew that had worked with him many, many times. And he's, you know, I mean, I always said he's Jimmy Stewart, John Ford, or John Wayne and John Ford wrapped in the same body. You know, he's an incredible director and a wonderful actor.
Does it seem like it's almost like a different life, but it's not, is that, you know, you worked with Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda. I mean,
vaudeville. They were all from the old school vaudeville, you know. I mean, many of them, Gleason and.
What a way to grow up for a young guy like you to be just with them as much as anything else. I'm learning.
I watched Jackie Gleason's show before I was, you know, ever worked with him every week, and you know, from Florida and Miami. And it was vaudeville, you know, he'd play all these different characters and then to work with him. And he just was a gem. And so was Hope. I mean, they were just gracious, nice.
Brilliant.
Lucy was the same way. Lucy was tough. Lucy was a taskmaster. You know, she demanded your best because she brought her best always. And she was always there and prepared and on, you know. And if there was, you know, whether you were 5 or whether you were 55, didn't matter to her. Let's get this right. So I'm like, okay. So you had your stuff together when you worked with Lucy. And Henry Fonda, I remember one scene he had, first scene we shot, it was in a living room and he had a bunch of kids running around and then he had to go somewhere. He was in uniform and he gets up and he just walks to the door and he had this big speech, some speech to it. And I read the script and I was going, I don't know how I would act this. I don't know if I was him, I don't know what I would do. And he just got up, walked to the door, and he just was Henry Fonda. And it was just like, oh my God, that's a star. You know, he filled it with his humanity and his heart and just simple and was very simple. He didn't do it too much. And he just, you know, and I was, I was an amazing lesson to me, you know. And then Lucy, on the other hand, was a whole other thing, but that was her persona, you know, and her character was the comic relief in that movie too.
I tell you what you want to put on your showreel though. It only took a couple of whiskeys to get Christine Baranski into bed. I mean, the other day. I mean, you've still got it, man. I'm telling you. Still, it's still in the locker, Tim. It's still
that's
in the
right. Locker. That's right. We won't let my wife know about that one. But it's,
no, yeah. Absolutely not. Now, listen. Okay, COVID and what have you. What's coming up for you? Do you know? Is there anything good in the pipeline, or is there anything you'd like to do, or what's coming up?
It's unique. I can't really mention what it is, but I'm doing a Netflix show now. On location shooting. And it's a unique situation to be on a set. Everyone wears a mask and a visor, and constantly are spraying everything down and trying just to protect everyone, because you've got, you know, 80 to 100 people in a enclosed space, and they've got to improve the ventilation and, you know, and we have to take care of each other. At first it was a little distracting, but you know, I think this too will pass. I think, you know, now that it seems to be headed in the right direction, and hopefully the turn of the year, things in America will improve in the way it's being managed, and we'll get over the hump, I guess. But it's, you know, it's a worldwide problem, and I don't think it's going to be going away really quickly.
No. Listen, I'm going to finish with this one. It's been lovely talking to you. When I was a kid, oh, I used to dread it, honestly. Every time the Blooming Virginian came on, my mom used to go, come on, time. It was almost like, time for bed, come on. It was like, you know, the opening credits, James Jury, Doug McClure, off we go. It was like, off to bed we go. Oh, come on, we want to watch.
90 minutes, for God's sake.
It was so much fun. Never saw an episode.
Never did. It was so much. It was, It was the only one of the few shows that was 90 minutes long. Wow. And it was great though, because you could do it literally, shoot it as fast as they shoot today, because you had, you know, they always wore the same clothes. It was the only kind of show in those Westerns. They always wore the same thing. So you could do stock footage of riding into town, or racing out of town, or riding or whatever, or riding with the Virginian, or riding a Trampas and the Virginian and me, or, you know, so you'd shoot all that stuff and they'd use it again and again and again. And we'd literally shoot an episode in 8 days. And it was my first time on a series, and I got to work with these wonderful character actors and great actors. And you know, McClure was a joker and he was fun. And Jim Drury, who just passed, was a real trickster too. You know, he loved the crew. And that's where I learned you sort of have to take care of each other, and they take care.
Hey, do you know what? Thanks.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
It's been lovely talking to you. We'll watch your amazing career continue with great interest. Take care of yourself. Look after yourself. Don't be riding horses through the desert too fast and all that kind of thing.
That's right.
Stick to those doctor roles. You look after those people.
I'm in the doctor phase of my career now.
Gone through the cowboy phase and the doctor phase now.
That's right.
Listen, Tim, take care. Lovely talking to you. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.